As a purpose-centered entrepreneur and aspiring supernova, you know that you're here to step into your greatness, to inspire, to illuminate, and ignite authentic experiences. This is Lana Ski, hostess of the Supernova podcast, and this is your weekly invitation to greatness. Rasplin, welcome to the Supernova podcast. It is absolutely amazing to tune in with you and to have you here on this call.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here and to be a part of your podcast.
Oh, it's so special. I was listening to your album, the record label Send It Over, and I was just so busy with so many different things. I'm like, no, I need to make time for this. And I think the day that I ended up listening to it was either a new moon or a full moon. Can't remember which one. And when I saw the cover, I was like, oh no, I just need to make space for it. And it was such a journey. And I think I actually just commented on that again just the other day on Facebook. It's amazing how much of a movement music can be for somebody and how it can transport them to another realm.
Thank you. I really appreciate you saying that. that's really pleasing to me to hear that it has that kind of effect on other people. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it has that effect on me when I'm writing it and it's coming out of me. You know, I feel like sometimes I sit down and I'll have an idea in my head and I'll have usually a vision that I'm working with. Like I have this picture that's going through my head like a dream. And then I just, it's almost like film scoring, to be honest. It's like, but the movie is one that's going on in my head that I'm seeing of like a story. And I'll sit down and I'll work for hours and hours. And sometimes when it's over, I just go and play back what I wrote. And I'm like, how did that get there? Like, I have no idea. I just, like, I know I'm sitting here and I'm doing things, but I just go somewhere completely different and it just kind of flows out. And I just get really into it and then kind of don't know how it got there afterward. So it's, if I can really take somebody else also out of their present moment and really into the place I create, that's amazing.
Well, I think it speaks a lot into the art of creativity, because when you step into a creative space, the world just becomes pinks and purples and everything just becomes such a different realm. You're really transcending beyond the veil of what we know as this structure and this reality. And also with your kind of spiritual background with clairvoyance and the fact that you're plugging in and tuning into something higher, it must make that experience so much more heightened.
It does. I mean, especially since I've actually been connecting the two, you know, because I went to music school and wrote, I studied orchestral composition. That was about 10 years ago. And back then I wasn't, doing clairvoyant reading yet. I was having like some psychic phenomenon happening, but I was never really putting the two together. And I was making, pieces still similar to how I'm creating music now with like a visual idea in my head and really just going with that. But since I've actually realized what's really going on and how to use my clairvoyance and that I'm actually telling a story of my own spirit, it's definitely made my music really more like intense in a way and, more whole. And, I don't know how to say that, but definitely, made things come together in a very profound way for me.
Mm. And you can hear it. You can almost feel it. Like when I was really tuning into it and not just listening into the track, but like, what is, like almost trying to plug into what your movie is. And obviously it's subjective and we'll never quite get the same thing, but I constantly got this influence of femininity and wisdom and sacredness, which you kind of bring in with the priestess and the goddess elements, but also this like really big power story. Like it feels like that's a big thing for you.
Did I
tune into something there or am I off the charts completely?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, sometimes people, even men will tell me, they're like, oh, I listen to your music. They're like, it's kind of badass. And I'm like, you know, it makes me laugh. I'm like, yeah, I guess I have. There's a lot of like anger, I think, behind being a woman for me. There's been a lot of, I think throughout many lifetimes, a certain degree of punishment for that and invalidation and like really having to prove yourself or being like even imprisonment and rejection. But, you know, that brings up a whole world of feelings of like angst and, you know, just anger toward how you've been treated and the lack of freedom you've been able to have. And so I think what comes out in my music is a lot of previous and even some things in this life, but really not that bad. You know,
or like
battles.
Channeling those past experiences or those global experiences.
Yeah. And really just kind of letting like the certain moments of rage kind of come through and just re-owning your power as a woman and being like, I can be this beautiful, but this angry at the same time, if that makes any sense.
Or have deadly. Like,
yeah, like it's not like the feminine, element is not just something pretty and to be taken lightly. It's one of the most powerful energies on the earth or beyond. You know, we have the power to create. And that should be respected and appreciated. And it's a, you know.
The way women have been represented over the years, we've always kind of played a very subdued part. Now, kind of, if you look at our culture right now, apart from certain countries which are still very much in that old school of thought, it feels like the channels have shifted, but we still find ourselves trying to be in a man's world, and we still find ourselves playing by those rules. Meanwhile, it really doesn't have to be that way. And I think what you said is so, so powerful, especially for the woman listening in, and even for the guys, because there's a lot of purpose-centered guys who just really connect with it and understand it, is the idea that we don't have to be subdued. A woman isn't somebody which is pretty and in the corner and put on a pedestal and just there to add an attraction to the room. There's something really meaningful and valid that you have to say, and sometimes you just need to raise your voice and get it out there.
Yeah. And, I mean, also to be said, like, you better believe that if a woman is being subdued over and over again, the power that she has inside is not a weak one. You know, like, at some point, like, they can be just as powerful as any man, and really kind of level things out. So, you know, it's just, and I think that is happening in a huge way across, at least it seems like first world cultures these days, that women are like ready to step up and take their power back. And they are kind of still playing by the patriarchal, society rules, but hopefully that'll change a little bit and start being more, you know, appropriate to what women can really have.
Absolutely. Because there's magic that happens when women come together, and we've seen it time and time again when there's a community of women, and when it's geared towards not just women, but being in feminine practice as opposed to over strict masculine practice. Things happen. There's just symmetry and magic and a sense of community that happens, wherein I remember seeing this thing where countries are masculine, like all the masculine countries are in war. All the feminine influenced countries are creating innovation. They're part of the global change that's happening to heal this planet. So being able to see those two distinctions is so important.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not always completely like peaceful with women. There is a lot of like female competition that happens, but which is just a natural thing. But like, for instance, at the psychic school that I have gone to and give readings at, it is 98% women there. So I think, and you know, it's, everyone knows that the director is a man, but he's like, you know, for some reason, women are just way more open to experiencing and tuning into their spirituality and their feelings and their emotions than men are. And that's a really big deal. So it's great being a woman, but it's also kind of sad to see that like there's so many women who are ready to partake in this and communicate with each other and other beings on like this higher level and who want to do like powerful spiritual work and change things. But they seem to have, women seem to have much more of an attraction and openness to that than men do. And I think that really says something.
And then to almost contrast that in the other realm, it feels like there's a lot more men in the music industry, or at least generally, you know, in producing and those kinds of record labels there. And then
it's a control.
Of course, the control. And then also when the women are presented in the music videos, it's completely out of their power, completely out of their own integrity, because they're playing into some other story.
Yeah.
So how have you balanced the two? Or how are you trying to balance the two?
Luckily, we'll see. In many ways, I'm just starting out. You know, this is my debut album. And luckily, the record labels I've been involved with so far seem to have a lot of respect for women. One of the labels I used to work with, All Roland Musique, and I'm still very close with them. They're like a family label. It's really wonderful, out of Switzerland, and they actually all migrated to the US recently. But I was the only female on the label for a little while, but they're all just such open and loving and supportive people. So that was really great. And the label I have now, Mythical Records, again, their biggest artists are the project of Brett Branning. And he is male, but other than that, it appears that almost everyone else on the label is female. Mm-hmm. So luckily I've gotten myself associated with people who are promoting me and supporting me who don't seem to have a problem with the strong feminine figure, and are embracing it and supporting it. And luckily also I do most things myself. Like I recorded my whole album in my bedroom where I'm sitting right now alone. And I write all the music myself. I play it all myself. So it's in that way, it's nice. I don't have anyone else's judgments or decisions about my work being put on me at the moment, so that's really, really lucky of me. And you know, I am planning on making my own music videos and stuff like that, so I'll be the one choosing what I'm doing in it and the content and all that. So for the moment, I've been really, really lucky, and I'm kind of in control of all of how I'm coming across.
And the good thing also, I mean, you do a lot of film scoring, so you're naturally in that world. You're naturally around the filmmakers that you would need to bring on board. So it feels like everything's really connecting for you in this orbit.
That's nice. I literally, my day job is that I manage a video production studio. So I literally work at one. So I have a whole staff.
There we go.
We've got some downtime. It's time to shoot your video. So yeah, I'm incredibly lucky. I've been working there for 8 years, as well. And we're in Chicago. So a lot of, Chicago's a huge ad town. Which I mean, I shouldn't be saying publicly, but it's not really my thing. I'm not like super passionate about advertising. And it's not really what I don't actually like it all that much. But that is the business and this is where we are located. So, I don't have a creative role really at the business. It's kind of my job to keep track of what everybody's doing all day and account for it. But it is great that when we do internal projects, or even people I work with do short films or feature length films. You know, I'm right there to score for it, or we collaborate on projects sometime. To be honest, our audio engineer, his wife is South African, and she actually runs safari tours. Mm-hmm. So he keeps going on trips to Africa and shooting, like video shooting all of these safari videos, and then I've ended up doing some scoring for those.
Well, you should come down like, next time, and we'll rendezvous somewhere along the way.
So I do have a small South African connection there. But yeah, it's really awesome. I'm so lucky to be working literally at a place that's like a playground for anything I would want to do, video wise. So, hopefully I'll be taking more advantage of that real soon.
It's all falling in your lap, and it's now just a matter of timing, sounds like.
Yeah. It took a while. You know, when I started working there because I'd gotten my degree, in just classical music composition, people always said that my music was very cinematic, and I always liked writing for film or for dance or multimedia or something more than just, you know, the music. And so I was like, well, maybe I can get in at a video studio and eventually, you know, end up scoring things. And that was 8 years ago, and my job has not turned completely into music scoring, but I'm actually really happy with that, because I've realized that, like, I see editors and graphics artists all day who spend all day doing work, their art for someone else, mm-hmm. for, you know, a customer, and then they get really burnt out, and then they don't want to do their own art at home, you know, when they have the free time. And so I'm actually really glad that it's not my job to score for commercials or film full time, because then I don't think I'd have the creative energy left to write the kind of music for me that I want to. So I'm glad that it's worked out this way.
Sure. And then at what point did you kind of realize there's an album in me and I need to get this out?
This was kind of a complete accident. I never had any intention of being a solo artist. I'm actually really shy, performance-wise, and even in college, if a ensemble was performing one of my pieces up on stage, I'd be like in the back row with my sweater like over my head hiding. Like, I do not like to be front and center, performing. It's my soul is out there being judged by people. So, and I'm someone who's kind of afraid of that in ways, but, I ended up running a chamber ensemble with a friend of mine who I had gone to school with for a couple years, and I composed for that, and that was going pretty well. There were 12 members, but it was so much work. It was literally a whole nother full-time job to schedule rehearsals and arrange all the music and still compose and book shows and do all this stuff in addition to my full-time job. And then I had some of my music up on SoundCloud, and my good friend who runs Al Roland Musique, he's a French musician, his name is Philippe Gerber, he found my music and asked me if I would collaborate with him. And he's actually an industrial drone artist, and he kind of comes from a spiritual place as well. His project name is John 316. He's not actually religious, but it's kind of like a social experiment. Like all of his music doesn't have any words, so you can take it just as, it's kind of like mine in that way. You take it as that face value of how it moves you. Mm-hmm. And his music is incredibly powerful, incredibly deep. It, like, the moment I heard it, I was blown away by it. So when he messaged me asking me if I would collaborate, I was just really, honored and surprised by that. So, we did a track together where I played clarinet. You know, blending of our two styles actually worked out beautifully. And some of our music is really, really, sacred sounding and intense and dark and deep. And, so I ended up going and meeting him and visiting in Switzerland. And at some point I realized that he had his own record label and he wasn't just an artist. And so I had all of these classical tracks that I had composed in college and had professionally performed. And my initial intention was just to put out an album of that, of like all the things I had previously written, and just try to give them the opportunity to be distributed and see if anyone would like them, just to put them out in the universe. But I actually wasn't really intending on writing that much new music. It was more like, I want to put out an album of everything I already have done. Mm-hmm. And so he agreed to that. But then somewhere along the lines, he was like, oh, well, if we're putting out an album, then you need to play shows. And I was like, how do I play shows by myself if it's orchestral music? And he was like, you have to play shows. And he booked me to play this festival. And I was like, what? I have to figure this out. So I ended up, you know, kind of being pushed to create, somehow be a solo artist creating classical music. And the actual live chamber ensemble I had got to be just too hard to manage. And they were all professional musicians and we're gigging every night and we all had different schedules and it was just a really big group to manage and hard. So I let that go and started doing
how
everything.
How big was the group? How many?
12.
Oh, wow.
That so it big. Was, you know, two clarinets, flute, oboe, trumpet, French horn, cello. We had a bassoonist who was amazing. He had actually tried out for the Chicago Symphony Orchestra before. Two violins, viola. I'm trying to make sure I'm not missing anybody. I think that's about it. But yeah, at the most, there were 12 of us, and it just got to be really difficult to manage. So then I just started focusing on doing all of the orchestrations electronically. But what was cool is that at first I thought it would be a crutch to lose the actual live performers. And I felt really bad about that. But then I realized that when I was able to do everything electronically, like instead of sitting there and playing with only the clarinet, then I was like, oh, I can sing. I can do all of these other things over my music that I never could do before when I was actually playing in a live group. So it really ended up freeing me up creatively in a huge way, because I would have never even considered singing. And as you know, on this album, all but one track, I'm singing a lot of the time. So this all just kind of came by accident, and I never knew that I would be putting out an album of me doing my orchestral stuff while singing and doing all this other stuff over it. And it just happened, really.
It's amazing how these moments come upon us. Like, there's clearly something there, and it takes somebody or ourselves or just a point in the universe to just kind of dent in and go, come on, step it up. And it's scary. It's such an unknown. To go in, as you were saying, a solo artist gigging, it's a very different thing. Your style of music is so specific. It's not you on a guitar. And it's so easy to get caught in that. But when you do that, I'm sure you feel like in those moments where you're making music or you're on stage, like, this is really what it's all about.
Yeah. It's like, I'm still kind of terrified to perform, but I'm getting better at it. We're confident, we're up there, but it's like, I'm always like, what am I doing? Like, I don't want to be up here. terrifying. But, and then, you know, I think after one of the last shows I played, one of my friends was there and she was like, oh, there's a girl in back. And I heard her telling her friend that she had chills all over her whole body, you know? And I was like, well, that's pretty amazing. You know, if it takes me like getting over being terrified and getting up there and I can have that kind of effect on people, that's amazing, you know?
But even that, I mean, people feel you in that, and you can alchemize that in so many different ways. It's the same with a person going up to speak on a stage or to do anything. When you've got that and you can use that as your power source and just hold that space, people react to you on a much deeper level because they start feeling it too.
And right.
It's just absolutely amazing.
It is. I'm like, I'm blown away by everything.
I can imagine. I mean, so. I've never done the being on stage singing thing. I was always more the girl behind the scenes, or like you were doing, you know, managing and doing the production work behind it. So total respect for showing up and owning it, because I think you need to be celebrated in that.
Thank you. You know, I think something's funny. In a couple of the reviews my album has gotten, the reviewer specifically said, you know, like, it takes courage to do this kind of music or just to do what she's doing. And I think that's really, it's interesting to me because I don't really feel like I did need courage. Like, I mean, I guess that says how different my music is being perceived, but you know, I just wrote this music for myself in my bedroom, you know, so I didn't really, it didn't take that much courage to do that.
True. But yeah, I think it's just, because it's so soulful that people feel themselves in the music. So, and they're going through their own vulnerabilities and their own authenticities and all the things that are coming for them. And because it becomes so personal, they imprint that courage on it because they're feeling it as much as you're writing it.
Oh, that's amazing if that's true. Yeah, but it's just, it's interesting. Like I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I'm being propelled, you know, like it doesn't take much courage for me to write this music by myself in my room for me, but I guess to actually put it out in the way that I have been. But it's also, you know, the people who have decided to promote me and to put my music out there, I think it's taking almost like more courage on their part to do it. Maybe. I don't know.
I think it takes courage to do so many things out there and we don't even realize it. Even if it is just a mediocre little thing, we're so scared of judgment and this, that, and the other. And then when it's something that's so personal, or when there's an investment of like a promoter investing in you, knowing on, you know, whether or not you're going to make it and whether or not they're going to make money at the end of the day, that takes courage.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess another thing that makes it nice for me is that at least at this point, I'm not trying to live off of my music either. I have plenty of friends who are and who do, and their lives are very stressful and they're always struggling and, you know, worrying about like, how they're going to pay their rent and are they getting booked to play enough shows and all that kind of thing. And again, I'm so lucky that I have the freedom that I have a different job that pays my bills. And so if my music sells or not, or if it makes money or not, is really not the point for me. It's, you know, hopefully the right kind of people who want this kind of music will end up finding it and be able to hear it and appreciate it. And that's really my goal, is just for people who would be my fan base, who are searching for this kind of music, and who are moved by it, will get to hear it. But, the selling of it is really very secondary.
Of course. So. Well, Ruspin, can you maybe take us through a little bit of, Scenes Through the Magic Eye and like a bit of the tracks and just what the story is that inspired them for you?
Okay. I haven't done this before. Yeah. This is fun. A lot of times the story just comes as kind of like a very short little idea or vision that I'm getting. The first track, Circle Round, was actually what I think is like my most experimental track. That was when I wrote that was my first time really, using my vocals a lot, and I chopped them up and went forward and backward with them and did all kinds of things. And it was really like a huge experiment. And I was like, is this even gonna sound any good, or is anyone gonna like it? But it turned out pretty good, I guess. You know, what's really interesting is that the lyrics I used, "We are a circle within a circle with no beginning and never ending," I actually only heard that once. It's a folk chant. And I believe I was in high school at someone had like some sort of outdoor party, and there were some like Wiccan people there at the time. and they sang this beautiful chant in like a round. And that was the only time I ever heard it in my life. And that was probably literally like 15 years ago or so. But that I never forgot it. I always remembered that one chant that they sang, and I always thought it was really beautiful, and it stuck with me. So I just had this vision in my head of like literally being in these rich, dark green trees in a forested area somewhere, probably in like Northern England or Ireland, or, you know, Northern Europe, you know, kind of middle age times. And I could just see, like, had this like really deep, rich feeling of like being connected to the earth and dancing in circles among the trees and having like a ritual there. And that's what, you know, bore this song. And I really tied that, chant that I'd heard 15 years ago to it. And I just felt like it all, came together and, wove its, I mean, that out of all my, well, there's a lot of layers in all my tracks, but that one really, there's like a weaving that happens with the vocals. And, I even did some panning later on in the track where the vocals are going from like one side of the speakers to another, which also helps kind of like spin the circle, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. No, you can really feel the movement in it. Like you really feel like you're in this, not vortex, but in that circle, and it's beautifully crafted.
Thanks. Yeah, I think that one ended up being the most hypnotic of my tracks. You kind of get like in this little wave going. So yeah, that's kind of the story behind that track. And Priestess of the Goddess is a really, I think, it gets very intense. That's one where I have no, even when I listen to it, I'm like, how did I do this? I don't know. There's so many layers and so much going on. And, yeah, that's a very powerful song. That was inspired by, I had been having this vision. One day I was meditating, and I, what's really, really fascinating about some past life work that I do is, that you actually learn from it. You literally, I've like three or four times I've seen things when I'm reading past lives, or when they just come up when I'm reading people, and it's things I've never known about before, or I didn't know happened in history. And I'm like, really? Is like, this is what I'm seeing. Okay. So I'm going with it. But then later on, I'll actually go and do research on the time period or about that place or people. And I will find that like what I was seeing actually was a thing that happened that I previously didn't know about. And I'm actually like learning history by seeing it, like psychically. And it's kind of mind blowing. So I had this one vision where I was meditating, and all of a sudden I had all of these arms coming out and flowing along the sides of me, very much like the goddess Durga. And I had this strong impression that like at some point I wasn't just you know, I was like, I wasn't a god, like I couldn't possibly have been a goddess. Like what is this? You know, like why am I seeing this? And then I talked with some other people, and other people did readings, and I did more readings too. And it, and then I did research, and it turns out that back there was a huge time period, and it even still happens in places like Nepal, where there literally are young women who are designated as being priestesses of the goddess Durga. And they are actually considered to be living embodiments of the actual goddess, not just an assigned priestess, but like they're actually channeling the goddess during their lifetime. And, it's also amazing that not only did I read this for myself, but without saying anything or without even telling anyone else, I, in other readings where people were reading me, it came up and they literally saw the exact same thing happening to me. Like when I was very young and I was being, like worshiped and venerated in Indian communities many, many, many centuries ago as, you know, an actual priestess of the goddess. So I wrote that track about that experience. and that track really just flowed out with no effort.
It was just channeled.
Yeah, that one, I mean, most of all of mine are, but that one really, I remember afterward thinking, like, how, like, I couldn't believe that I even wrote that track. And what's the next one? Treasures Drowned was actually interesting. I got asked to do a project for the International Beethoven Festival, which is something that's hosted every year in Chicago. And a certain section of it, they ask local composers or musicians of all different kinds, like rock bands, fiddlers, jazz players. They give you an option of themes that were composed by Beethoven, and they ask you to create your own piece based on a theme.
Wow.
So the little in that track, just the like kind of plucking violin line is part of a tune that from one of his pieces, and then I just built this whole kind of my vision for that track was of like a underwater sinking society. And actually, I tie that one to Atlantis quite a bit. Like, this huge empire just slowly drowning and having all of its knowledge and riches just slowly sink, like almost like a giant pipe organ to the bottom of the sea. And when I listened to it, I used a lot of, very warping sound effects. So it's almost like, you know, if you're in a pool of water, or in, and you know, like someone drops something, you hear it, but it sounds like so echoey and strange and weird. That's really the environment that I was trying to create around that piece. Like everything's kind of warped and warbly and, but like still beautiful and just sinking down to be like hidden beneath, you know, layers and layers of sand and just secrets that need to be rediscovered and uncovered over time. Open Door is actually a track
single, isn't it? It's the first single.
The first single was Priestess of the Goddess, actually. Oh, okay. Open Door was the first track I think I posted from the album recently, but I actually put out Priestess of the Goddess as a single last September 2013 on a different label. So that one's been out for a little while, but yeah, I did start posting Open Door first recently. And this one I wrote after I came back from Greece this summer. I went for a friend's wedding and we went on an absolutely fantastic, like 3 week long trip across the pretty much entire country. I was completely floored and blown away by the beauty of Greece. I had no idea it was going to be that amazing. I love nature and I love traveling. I've been to New Zealand, and I love, you know, massive mountains and forests and trees and, oh my gosh, I didn't know what I was getting into when I was going to Greece. And if there's any place that I've been to that is the most heaven-like, it is Greece. I was like, it completely makes sense to me now that this has been known as like the land of the gods for so many years, because when you're completely just surrounded by water on all sides with huge mountain cliffs and there's like this mist in between everything, it's completely otherworldly and mind-blowingly beautiful. So I came back from there, especially having surrounded myself with so much ancient history and you know, it's a big warring state. I just felt really inspired for the track Open Door. And that one was specifically about imprisonment. And then freeing yourself. And like the vision I really had was just being on this giant ship sailing to, like, after a lot of strife and a lot of turmoil and a lot of punishment and imprisonment, but being freed and then finding that you have like the vast world in front of you and you can make whatever you want of it. But you just have to have the courage to go and to take that step and see where things lead. So that was the story behind that track. Temple Moon is probably somewhat self-explanatory. Again, I was inspired by visions of this just kind of attack. Again, very ancient lands, ancient places. This one seemed to be inspired by the area of Greece as well. It's really interesting because this year I've been lucky enough. It's mind blowing. I got to travel to India and Greece in the same year.
Wow.
It totally ties in with this album and all the music I've been writing over the past 2 years. Like, I can't even believe I got to go to both of those places in 1 year, but I did.
Beautiful. So it helped it land for you.
Oh man, absolutely. So, Temple Moon is really just about being hunted down and attacked for, you know, ritual purposes, and because you're seen as a powerful and threatening being, that needs to be, you know, subdued, basically. Mm-hmm. And in that track, I did not become free at the end. It's very much, you know, a chase scene and a battle and terror and, you know, the worst that could happen. As far as like, and I have to say that I think that track was, I'm a big fan of Stravinsky, and although we have pretty different writing styles, I definitely feel like I was pretty inspired by him and his The Rite of Spring kind of inspiration there, like a similar sort of sacrifice going on. And Among the Stars, he's a Finnish artist, experimental artist named Juttu Lauturi, and I consider him to be a holy man. His music is very earth-based. When I hear it, it just blows my mind. It's very dark and tribal, but I just envy him. He lives in such a nature-filled environment, and some of his recordings, you can hear like these amazing birds chirping and rain falling in the forest and all this amazing stuff. So I asked him if he would like to collaborate, and so he sent me vocal recordings and sound recordings that he had done in Finland and France, and then I put them together and added my own elements to that track. And for that, I kind of was trying to that's my track about the future. It was more like using astral and cosmic energy and seeing those bodies move through space and the wonderment of what it would be like to be completely out in the darkness with all these beautiful stars moving around you and creating life out there. So that's really what I use as my inspiration for that track.
Wow.
And the last track is a remix that Brett Branning did with his project Ephemeral Mists. He runs Mythical Records record label, and that's one of his projects, and I think he did an awesome job at remixing Priestess of the Goddess.
Oh, for sure. It's just amazing to see how much soul and the story that comes out of it, and it really took a lot of, I think, vulnerability, even if it didn't feel like it, because the process, you say, seems to be easy, but it's so personal, and I think that's really great, because there isn't so much authentic music happening these days.
Yeah.
If we look at, like, what's commercial, it's cool, it's showy, like, I love it, but it's not true. It's not really speaking into what's really happening, what the issues are, and who you are as an artist. And I think this album really gives that insider perspective so that people can join you on this journey from this album till the 100th or 10,000th or whatever, however many you're going to do.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. Well, and to say, it's not.
Eighth.
When I say that it's easy, I mean that it's easy for me to be myself.
Yes.
When I'm sitting in my room alone. You know, mm-hmm. I don't have anyone else's expectations or judgment about the music I'm writing. But each of these tracks, like, I know so many bands who are like, oh, every 3 months they're putting out a new album or something. I'm like, what? It takes me usually 3 months to write a track.
Mm-hmm.
because there's a lot going on and there's a lot of different instruments and I'm pretty grueling. I'm not a fast writer at all. And then I spend just as much time mixing the whole thing myself as, and getting it sounding like until I'm absolutely satisfied with it. So it does take, it's not easy in that sense. It does take me quite a bit of time to, get the tracks out and get them how I like them. Usually I'm getting faster, but 3 months has definitely been true for some of these tracks.
Well, it's a commitment to your craft, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You don't have to become a mass producing artist.
I wouldn't want to be. It's a lot.
Of course. Well, for anyone who is in Chicago listening or close enough and wanting to come through, and for people in the rest of the world, how can they connect with this amazing album and the work that you're doing?
It's called Scenes Through the Magic Eye, and you can search for it. It's on Amazon, it's on iTunes, it's for sale on the Mythical Records Bandcamp page. You can also find me on Facebook under Rasplin. My website is www.rasplin.com. I also have my SoundCloud page is under Rasplin, and it will have all the tracks there. I'm on Spotify as Rasplin. Pretty much every, music media source has me listed as Rasplin. So if you just search for Rasplin, you should be able to find, my pages and then links to the album, but definitely it's available on Amazon and iTunes and Bandcamp.
Brilliant. Well, I definitely recommend it to everyone. It is such a great journey. And I think now that as this podcast is being aired, it's the perfect time for you to shape your own story. You know what Rasplin's story is going through all these songs, and you can definitely hear those influences there. But learning what those songs mean for you and connecting with your own story and creating your most powerful year yet, that's going to be the magic, I think, for all the listeners tuning into this album.
Thank you. I hope so. And I'm very, very excited about it. And I'm very happy that you appreciate what I've done.
Oh, totally love it. Totally, absolutely love it. I follow a lot of musicians, but it's very rare for me to kind of go, that's just amazing. And like spreading it everywhere. So I'm so glad that you took the time out and we were able to connect.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I'm really humbled and honored.
Give yourself permission. Permission to be amazing, bold, generous, valued, celebrated, inspired, and transformed. Because when you choose to live from courage and be authentically real, and you choose to make the moment, meet the moment, step up and step in, being the true illuminary that you really are, and honoring the supernova within, that's when you honor the invitation to greatness. For more information, head on over to www.lenaski.com.